everyone.
I call this meeting to order for the 86th session of the Senate of the Associated Students on Wednesday, March 27, 2019, at 5:31 p.m. in the Rita Layton Senate Chambers on the third floor of the Joplin College Student Union. Moving to agenda item number 2, Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Moving to agenda item 3, roll call.
Speaker Martinez.
Present.
Senator Ahmed.
Present.
Senator Alvarez.
Absence excused.
Senator Amaya.
Present.
Senator Aziz.
Present.
Senator Burton.
Present.
Senator Clemens.
Present.
Senator Collins.
Present.
Senator Jobs.
Absence excused.
Senator Flangus.
Present.
Senator Grant.
Present.
Senator Green.
Present.
Senator Hudson.
Absence excused.
Senator Hughes.
Present.
Senator Lemus.
Present.
Senator McKinney.
Present.
Senator Rogoshevsky.
Present.
Senator Rogers.
Present.
Senator Sewell.
Absence excused.
Senator Westerman.
Present.
Senator Wilcox.
Absence excused.
Senator Yegiayan.
Present.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. And with that, we'll move to agenda item 4, adoption of minutes. We have the minutes from January 30th, 2019, February 26th, 2019, and February 13th, 2019. So I'm seeking a motion to approve agenda items A through C. Senator Green.
I move to approve agenda items A through C to the unanimous consent.
Is there any dissent to the motion? Seeing none, minutes pass. We'll now move to agenda item 5, public comment. And first up, we have the Executive Vice President and Provost. Provost Kevin Carman here today. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. This is an umbrella for those of you who may wonder if Adam wasn't used to having to use it, but it'd be raining. Let's see.
Yes.
So do you just want me to dive in, or did you have anything to...
I know all the senators were sent out information by Speaker Pro Tempore Hughes. So Speaker Pro Tempore Hughes, if you want to touch on it a bit, because I know you met with Provost Carman beforehand.
Yeah, so I met with Provost Carman, and they're making a new strategic plan. And so before we transition to the next Senate session, and all of us are, or most of us are gone, he wanted to be able to get feedback from this body as well as the next body to come in and see what our priorities are and what we want included in the strategic plan. Which I believe will be made in the fall of 2019, or start?
We will start the process in the fall of 2019, yes.
Yeah.
I'll describe that.
Yeah, so recommendations, like any recommendations you have, this is a good time to give them, pass them along.
Yeah, and I know some of you already have some items, but I, of course, just want to allow Provost Carman to present first on what he already has for the strategic plan for the university.
Great. Maybe I just give you a little bit of background on the process and the structure of how all this works. We're required by the Board of Regents to update our strategic plan every 7 years, and so we're coming up on that 7-year horizon. We also have a strategic plan that's associated with our accreditation body, the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, and historically those two plans weren't necessarily terribly well aligned because they were independent processes on different timescales. I will say that that's something that we have as an institution. We've worked hard over the last several years to get those two strategic plans aligned. They have the same major goals and metrics, and so they speak to each other, if you will, even though NWCCU has some specific requirements that we don't necessarily include everything in our strategic plan, but the point is that they're complementary and not contradictory, and we will continue to make sure that those two programs align. This is the coffee that I keep on my desktop, and somebody commented that I was coming in. Looks like you've been drinking some coffee, and I have spilled coffee on there. I've got notes on the back, but it's something that I keep out on my desk, and often when one does a strategic plan, what can happen is that you put a lot of effort into it, and you put it on the shelf, and then you come back sometime later and say, well, I wonder how we did. And instead of doing that, what we have done as an institution is, and I think something that we could probably have better student involvement with in the future, although there has been as we've gone along, is that we have established committees that annually review our strategic plan, and we have three or four major components to our strategic plan. There's learning, discovery, engagement, and sustainability. And we can talk more about what those four components are. But we have separate committees that then review the goals and the metrics associated with each of those broad categories within the strategic plan. We have within it, of course, our mission statement and our vision statement, and we have a statement of our values. And then there are a set of specific goals within each theme. So within the learning theme, goal one, for example, is to provide high-quality undergraduate degree programs taught by diverse, well-qualified faculty who continually improve the curriculum through assessment and innovation. And then we have some goals, some metrics that we measure there that we think would indicate if we're making progress toward those goals. One that I'll mention is that we have a goal of achieving a student-to-faculty ratio of 18-1 by the end of this plan, which would be in 2021. Beginning of 2021. And so that's a number that probably, for many of you, may not mean a whole lot. So where did you come up with 18-1? Well, we looked at the land-grant universities across the nation and posed the question, how many faculty relative to the number of students do they have? A lower number is better because that means there's more opportunity for students to interact with faculty, smaller classes, and that sort of thing. When we looked at our student-to-faculty ratio, when we began our strategic planning process several years ago, we were at 22-1. And if you look at that comparison to land-grant universities, we were at the very top. We were tied with Louisiana State University, which happened to be my former university, and West Virginia for the highest student-to-faculty ratio. So we committed to bringing that ratio down with the goal of achieving the median of land-grant universities, which is 18-1. I'm happy to report that as of fall, this past fall, we have moved it down to 19-1. So we've made steady progress on that, and there's a good possibility that we may achieve the 18-1. But the point is we've made progress, even if you don't necessarily get to exactly what your goal is, you're making progress toward that. Another metric that I'll mention is knowing that we need to add diversity to our faculty. And so we've implemented several initiatives over the last several years, training for search committees, providing targeted hires for opportunity searches, spousal and partner hire opportunities. So our goal was to move the diversity of the faculty, as determined by human resources, from 21% to 25%, which sounds fairly modest, but it's kind of hard to move that needle when you have faculty who are here, and so moving that overall percentage takes time. Well, so I'm happy to report that we're over 25%. We've met or exceeded our goal, but when I look at that more closely, I'm not so pleased with it because the diversity is really not so diverse. That is, there's a lot of Asian faculty that we've hired, and they're great faculty, but we haven't done as well, although we've made progress on hiring African American, Hispanic, and Native American faculty. And so just as an example, as we move into our next strategic planning phase, that's an area where I'd like to be a little more specific, that we need to target the growth in our faculty, diversifying our faculty in certain groups. A goal that we didn't meet, we had a goal of reaching 88% fall-to-fall retention of incoming freshmen, and we're at about 82% now. So that is an area where we still need to do work to achieve our goals. On the other hand, we have very close to achieved our goal of a six-year graduation rate of just over 60%, and we think that will hit that target by the end of this year. Now, with all of these targets, so even if you meet your target, you're never satisfied. So if we had met 88% fall-to-fall retention, I'd say, great, now let's go for 95, and I'm not satisfied until we have 100%, and so we should always aspire to be better. But it is important to set aspirational but realistic goals as we move forward as an institution. So the process then will be next year we will initiate a process that will engage the entire university, and your participation is not only wanted but it is needed as we identify what should be our goals as we move forward as a university. A lot has happened in the last several years. Most recently, our designation as an R1 university. I don't know how much buzz that creates among you, but I hear it's amazing to me how folks from across the country have come to us and recognized, wow, congratulations, you're R1, and it really has elevated our stature. What does that mean going forward? Does that change us as a university? Does it change our goals? It's a classification that by no means we have a guarantee of maintaining. That 3 years from now, they're going to do another classification, and they're going to look at metrics, and if we don't continue moving forward as a university, we won't retain that classification. Same is true with U.S. News and World Report. We're applying for the Carnegie Foundation to be recognized as a Carnegie Engaged University. And that application actually will go in on April 15th, and we'll know the answer to that by December of next year. But we have some big goals out there of where we want to continue to grow as a university and mature, if you will. I would also point out that although we've identified these four themes of learning, discovery, engagement, and sustainability, they are all intertwined. You cannot separate learning from discovery. There's the big part of what makes the educational experience important or valuable here at the university is you're taught by leading scholars within their disciplines. You have the opportunity to participate in their research. And of course, there's graduate education and undergraduate education. When we think about engagement, that includes service learning and internships with ASU and has been very active in supporting. And so being engaged with the community is very much part of the learning experience and often a part of the research discovery experience. So one of the challenges of a strategic plan is to delineate major goals while also recognizing that everything is interconnected and at the same time establishing specific goals and metrics that you feel can measure your progress towards your objectives, while at the same time not getting caught up in having 1,000 different metrics. You need to identify what are the really key indicators that tell us we're moving in the right direction, and don't necessarily give us every detailed data point about each one of our goals, but tell us that in general we're moving in the right direction. And then another component of a strategic plan is that it really needs to be a dynamic document. And so while we have our goals and we have our strategic plan, there's committees that meet each year give us guidance and say, well, we've met this goal. For example, NevadaFit, one of the things that I'd love to talk about, we had a goal of having 1,000 students by 2021. Well, last fall, we had 1,600 students. So, okay, what's the next horizon for that? So it doesn't mean we want to stop there. So anyway, as we move into next fall, I would very much appreciate, or thinking about next fall, I'd very much appreciate hearing from you what are the elements that you feel like should be in the strategic plan? Where are the opportunities to improve the university? What concerns or things that you think we need to improve upon? What are the good things that we need to keep? And importantly, how can we best engage with students as we go through this strategic planning process? So with that, I think I'll pause and then hopefully engage in a discussion.
Yeah, of course. We're moving now into a discussion starting with the first hand. Yes, Senator Burton.
So one of the goals under learning, it's a few questions, kind of couple number one. So under learning, one of the goals for 2021 is to achieve an undergraduate research participation rate of 40%. Where are we now, and how do we plan on providing more opportunities for undergrads to get involved in research across all colleges? Because I know, for example, ASU would be going to take a part into providing research opportunities for students.
You've contributed toward that. I'll confess that I don't have the most current number on that. Our committees will be meeting later this spring, and we'll be retabulating our information, but we're short of that 40% goal. That was an aspirational goal. I'll also add that that is probably one of the more difficult ones to actually measure accurately, because there are such a wide variety of potential research experiences, anything from doing an honors thesis to working on a funded research grant to possibly spending a few hours a week working on a paper with a professor. So how one quantifies that is challenging. However, we do have a commitment as we use a portion of our registration fees to plow back into undergraduate research experiences, and that was, you may recall, part of the agreement that we made a few years ago when ASUN supported registration fee increases, was to invest more in undergraduate research, and we have kept that commitment. ASUN has invested its own resources. So that's one where I think it would be helpful to, if we could determine better ways to actually quantify this and say, what does 40% actually mean? The goal would be, though, however, as a research university, to maximize undergraduate participation in research in some meaningful way before you leave this great institution. So that is something that's a great question and one that I think we could do better in shaping and identifying.
Thank you. Any further questions, comments? Senator Rogers.
Thank you for coming here today to speak with us. I really appreciate being involved in the conversation. So the mission plan of the university includes accessibility, but in the last strategic plan, it was only mentioned twice. I think that if it's included in the strategic plan, we'll be able to have more solid efforts to put forth.
Thank you for that comment. Would you elaborate? Accessibility means a lot of things, mm-hmm. and I'm curious of what precisely means to you.
For me specifically, I'm looking at ADA accessibility, mm-hmm. so not only accessibility but functionality, and then just including people of all ability levels. So if just to make it so, you're right, it is a lot of different things, so maybe if it's more specific in there, we can kind of get a ballpark range on what we are trying to do as a university.
So the reason I ask that is so we do think of there are students and faculty with mobility challenges, and this is a tough campus to get from up here to down there, and if you're in a wheelchair or on crutches, we've had vision impaired students who pointed out to us that some of our Braille signage is out of date. Yeah, it is. And so those are areas we need to work on. We also have issues around accessibility of learning materials, course materials, again, for vision impaired or hearing impaired. And that is a big area of emphasis for the university. We're updating our website and doing a lot of things along those lines. But it is a big, complex issue that I think what I hear from you is that we need to be more specific in delineating what the issues are and making sure that we are truly addressing them instead of sort of lumping them into a broad umbrella that they gloss over some important details.
And it doesn't have to be even specific to different abilities. We want to make it accessible to all people.
Yes.
So even non-traditional students, we want to make sure that everybody has a place in our strategic plan so they feel as though we are really trying to put forth an effort to make everybody feel welcome and that they can access this university.
Thank you for that.
Senator Green.
So I just wanted to clarify something real quick. You said there were four goals on the current strategic plan, right?
Four themes. Yeah. I said goals, but I meant
When I looked at the current strategic plan, sustainability wasn't one of them. It was just the first three that you mentioned.
Well, it's in line.
Okay.
I will check to see what are you going on the provost website or?
I just Googled there's a website for the current university strategic and
okay.
master plan, and it's just the one that goes from now until 2021
yep.
has the first three themes that you mentioned.
Okay,
so
I will check that. I apologize. So I carry around this silly old hard copy and haven't looked at what's on my own website, so I will do that. So.
Senator Flangus and Speaker Pro Tem Board Hughes.
Okay, so one of the big goals that I would like to see is something about transfer and non-traditional students,
mm-hmm.
looking at creating a non-traditional and transfer student center that works on the academic integration as well as a mentorship program with those students that are currently at the university that have figured out how to maneuver effectively. Like with non-traditional students, the things that they talked about is finding someone who told them up the hours for the child care program,
yep.
like stuff like that, just a connection, a center for them that works both academics and engagement. And then on that same kind of strain, I'd love to see tiered scholarship funding reinstated for transfer students, so that way not only we can be recruiting transfer students, but actually supporting them once they come here, because as it stands right now, the first year that they're here, they don't qualify for any kind of aid, except for Pell Grant aid, but every other kind of financial aid is not accessible to transfer students, and that includes in their colleges. In their colleges, you have to have been in the college for at least two semesters, so they don't qualify for any of that kind of scholarship funding either. So I'd just love to see some kind of infrastructure change and financial emphasis put on that population, especially now that students are coming from community college, that sometimes they qualify for free community college. We'd love to see them continue on at our institution. So that's one.
Great suggestion. That's very much on my radar. I completely agree with that. That's a group of students that are a really important part of our university and that kind of get left behind in a lot of the way we're basically set up to welcome first-time, full-time freshmen coming in the fall, and transfer students. Although there are programs for transfer students, are not as robust. They don't have the same financial aid opportunities as students who are being recruited as freshmen. One of the things that we're looking into that you may be of interest is it again that mentioned Nevada Fit. That is the program has really been great in helping retain and graduate incoming freshmen, but it's designed for those first-time, full-time freshmen. And so we are now working on a program for transfer students that would provide an opportunity for them. They wouldn't be the same as Nevada Fit, but something that really helped make sure that they hit the ground running, feel like that they're a member of the community. I talked to transfer students, and they said, you know, what the transfer students who come here are incredible. They're highly motivated individuals. They come here, and they succeed at very high rates. But it's a big change coming from a community college to the university, and I think we can do a lot more to help them with that transition. But the financial aid one is a really good observation. Thank you. Excellent.
Senator Hughes.
So I see in the current strategic plan it talks about student housing, and it says that at the end of the strategic plan the goal would be to have 25% of the total undergraduate student population in like dorms on campus. So saying that that was accomplished, which I don't know what the current numbers are, but that would still leave 75% of students who are not able to fit into these dorms. And it does mention university like pursuing public-private partnerships with housing, and it discusses like affordability and accessibility of those. So I think it'd be really awesome if it, like a matrix was looked into on what deems those places affordable, because currently the average cost of like an apartment for one bedroom, like just one shared apartment, is about $700, which would mean a college student is working 20 hours a week. And affordable housing is deemed no more than 30% of your monthly income for rent, and that's way over what most students are actually working. So what is currently in place is like incredibly over what would be deemed affordable. So I think re-looking at that, and especially like maybe putting a number on how many public private partnerships we want to have by the time that the next strategic plan is up, in order to actually like quantify whether or not we're meeting that for the students' needs.
That's a big challenge for the university, for students and for faculty. It's that the increased cost of housing has really put a lot of pressure on all the entire community. It's a tough one to solve, to be quite honest with you. We do have a public-private partnership with our graduate student and family housing, mm-hmm. but we have not established partnerships with other housing, with any of these housing projects that have gone up around campus. They certainly are convenient for students, but they're not formal partnerships with the university. We have added dorm capacity, of course, with Great Basin Hall, but you're right, we can't accommodate all students on campus, and not all students want to live in the dormitory, I understand that. So I think that what I will do is acknowledge that needs to be a major component of the next strategic plan, is address housing challenges for students and faculty that want to be associated with this great university but struggle to be able to find appropriate housing.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you. We have Senator Mai and Senator Flames.
As for 365 Learning, a big promise that they have is it's a flexible schedule, but currently a lot of the online classes are required to take proctored exams. So like if you want to go home for the summer, you still have to fly back twice. So I would like to see some change happen there, because I mean, they're promising flexible schedules, but I mean, if you have to fly back twice to take an exam, that's not very flexible.
That will be changed before the end of the semester. We've been looking at that now, and I agree with you, if we're going to have online courses, that we need to have remote examinations. And we will be in, it looks like we'll, I won't give the name of the product, but we have a proctor, there's an artificial intelligence program that can be used to proctor exams. We have had a committee over the last year that's been charged with determining what's the best way to do this, but with the charge that we will have online classes that are completely online and do not require students to return to campus to take exams. So that one, I think, hopefully we'll be able to check the box before we even go to the strategic plan, but I appreciate you bringing it up, because it is a very important issue for our online program and ease of access. Great.
Senator Flingus.
On the same kind of line of Senator Hughes' apartments, I was talking to, actually
got this idea from one of the AVP candidates, and she worked with Residential Life, and at her university, something like 90% of students lived in student-owned housing. And I know that's not feasible, but some of the programs that they do in the not necessarily dorm style, but more like apartment-style housing, is that they bring in their student services. So I would really love to see our student services go out to the big-owned apartments once a semester to update them about what we have on campus, because I think a lot of students move off campus their sophomore, junior, senior year, but that doesn't mean they stop needing assistance or wanting to interact with our student services, but they often don't know where they are. Whereas in the residence halls, they're there all the time, they're tabling, there's programming, but if we could bring them once a semester to each of those, like Identity, like Union, like the Highlands, bring them into those facilities, table for a day, talk about their services, remind people when the hours of counseling services are, that we have the tutoring center, all those kinds of different facets that could help students that might be struggling that no longer have an RA to look after them. So something like that.
Great suggestion.
Vice President.
I'm here.
Like center flangus.
Okay, I have one last one. I've been doing some research and haven't been on land-grant institutions, so I know there might be a financial hurdle. But it is, you know, idealistic. So I know at Northwestern they've engineered all their engineering entrance classes to make a project based on a need in the community. So they go out to the community and they ask, what's something that you need fixed? And then they build their course around that problem. And so the entire year, like both first semester and second semester, the entire student body or student class of that age group works on trying to fix that individual problem. Whether it's like a technology needed for like a medical center, whether it's building a bridge, something like that. They take a problem from the community and then they work on solving it as a class. And they often have been picked up by the community, actually. It's been really successful. So I don't know what the capability of building courses like that, where it is a community engagement-based class, and maybe it can't be like low-level, but maybe it can be an upper-level class, and it's just about, it's a community like problem-solving class, and I'm thinking within liberal arts, it can be like a policy. Within science, it can be something about like, you can't solve an illness, but something along the lines of that, of working with the community, asking what is a problem, maybe it's some kind of outbreak of some kind of disease, and what are the like steps that you can take to actually solve it. So it's like a community action plan on how to do that, and the entire semester dedicated to it. And I know that a lot of students said that they really loved the fact that they were doing something that our community actually wanted to see. And then on that same thread, if that's not possible, like building in all those classes, maybe trying to like work up to the idea of having service learning courses and the ones that can't necessarily build a course on community like problem solving. And so the idea is you have a service learning course or you have this course, and the idea is that every single student would engage with one of these courses before they would graduate. So it's like working to benefit the community for at least one semester.
I love the idea, and yeah. We are working to increase our service learning opportunities, and this whole business of that being engaged is exactly what you're talking about, is the sort of thing we're out actually working with the community to identify what are their issues, and we learn from working with them and hopefully solving some real problems that they have. If you wouldn't mind, if you could forward me a link to that particular program, I'd like to look at it. But that sounds like an aspirational goal. I think it's something that everybody would agree we would love to do. It's a question of scaling and how one actually implements it. As I'm sure, how many of you are graduating this spring? So you know that we have a capstone course, and so every major has some sort of capstone experience where it doesn't necessarily involve community engagement, but could.
Okay.
So there may be some structure there where we could look for more opportunities for that type of activity, but I think it's a great idea.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
I know that I talked to you about this briefly last time we met, but on the UNR tuition and fees page, it lists that people should expect to spend about $400 to $600 per semester on textbooks. That doesn't include materials and supplies. So I think it'd be super cool if, like, in the strategic plan, there was set goals to limit the amount of money that students are spending on course materials through whatever methods that I know that we discussed this in depth, but actually including some of that in the strategic plan on how we can, like, maybe no student will ever spend more than X amount per semester. And whatever would be needed to quantify that, I think that would be super beneficial.
I think that's, as we talked about, there are various initiatives that we have on going in your books, your bookstore, has been really great in partnering with us and looking for alternate and less expensive instructional materials. So whether it be I might suggest it probably wouldn't be productive to set an absolute limit on what a student would submit or spend on textbooks, because there are so many variations out there. But nevertheless, of setting goals of maximizing our use of these other instructional materials that are at no cost or lower cost, and working strategically towards reducing those instructional, the textbook costs, and licensing the things that Jeff looked into a bit of that as well. So I think that's a great example of what could be the strategic plan.
Thank you, Senator Collins.
Yeah, so going off what Senator Hughes said, I recently stumbled across the concept of open educational resources, and I've actually gotten pretty passionate about it and got to learn more about it and see how other universities across the nation, I think Oklahoma specifically, they have a pretty successful program with that. But I just wanted to ask, like, have you ever looked into that, or like, what's your opinion on that?
Well, that is part of what we've actually are discussing with the Wolf Shop, and we've had several meetings with them about how best to implement it. We actually have several faculty that are using these OERs, as they're referred to. The goal is how to expand them, encourage more faculty to use them. One of the challenges with OERs is if they're typically less structured than a traditional textbook, and so a faculty member is fairly appealing to have a textbook that has it laid out, you know, in a nice format with all the graphics and all the materials that you'd like to have, whereas these open educational resources are often ones that they're out there, but you have to go in and compile them and put together the chapter 1 through chapter 8 and what other supplemental materials that you need. There is now actually a budding industry within higher education. There's all sorts of companies out there that work to, you know, support higher education and make money off of higher education, to be quite honest. But there are a group of companies out there now that are recognizing that the gap between there's faculty who want to use OER and they want to reduce costs for their students, but they feel like they don't have the time or the resources to go out and compile them on their own. And so there are companies now that are offering services for a fee, but a fairly nominal fee, that will work with faculty to go out into that OER arena, compile the resources for them, and then deliver it for a small fee, but much less than you would typically pay for traditional textbooks. So that's an area where we've been talking with the Wolf Shop. Is there should we look at one of these companies and explore some opportunities to kind of move the needle on this? Again, we have some people that are doing it, but really, often one of our challenges at institutions is there's a lot of good ideas out there, but bringing them to scale is a challenge. So we have four or five, or there's more than that, there's a few dozen faculty that are using them, but how can we make it appealing to all faculty to explore this opportunity? And it may be that is by having low cost with it, by hiring a company to help them get those materials together. But you're right on target. That's exactly, I think, the important part of the future of higher education and instructional materials.
Senator Berg.
Jumping off of OERs, in theory, would that impact like certain colleges' accreditation? For example, College Business obviously has their accreditation reevaluated, I think, on a yearly basis.
Yeah, they're just in the process of getting reaccredited now.
Yeah.
Their second phase.
So would OERs effectively, since it's not following a certain textbook or anything like that, would that impact their ability to get accredited if some classes decided they want to use OERs and some say they want to stay with the structured textbook?
I don't think that it would, but it would be something that we would look carefully at for AACSB, for ABET, for engineering. There are other programs that have accreditation. So we want to be careful that we don't do anything to jeopardize accreditation. But typically, there's a lot of latitude given to faculty in choosing their instructional materials. It's really more, they will look more at the syllabus and the course content. I don't anticipate that would be a problem for accreditation. But as always, whenever we think of implementing some new strategy, we look carefully at our accreditation standards and make sure we're not doing anything to jeopardize that. But that's a good observation.
Are there any further comments, questions at this time? Senator Maya.
I would also like to see the strategic plan make efforts to create a 24-hour study space for students. It's currently only
And that would be, you would like it to be where?
Center playing it.
Because apparently the knowledge center is not feasible.
Center.
If I could just comment on that, that's a discussion that we've had almost since I've been here, I think.
Okay.
And we have, Dean Kathy Ray in the libraries has really worked hard to try and find some possible solutions. There are expenses associated with that. There are safety issues when you have a building open 24 hours. I think that's a discussion we need to continue to have, but the reality is that when we have kept it open for 24 hours, people don't come. And so, maybe onesies, twosies, but it's really not enough to justify. But I get your point, and we want you studying 24/7, so 365. I think it's an aspirational goal, and we should always be looking at how can we maximize the use of the Knowledge Center, the Pennington Student Achievement Center, other resources that are great opportunities for students to come and study and learn.
Center Flings.
On that same thread, when you do look for a 24-hour study space, I think you should keep in mind all the resources that a student might need, which is why the library provides a good option, like the anatomy boxes, like any of the software that's on the computers, stuff like that that people do need to utilize to study is why the library is ideal. But if it's not going to be the library, those same resources should still be thought about for students to utilize. And if we have, I looked on the Howie website, and it says that they only house something like 19% of our students, which that means 80% of our students are commuting to campus, and that we're expecting 80% of our students to utilize some other space to study when we close the library. So I know it's costly, but if we have that many students living off campus, creating a study space or incentivizing apartments to create a study space, something like that, is maybe the way that we should go, because they're commuting to campus, they're ideally trying to study here, but they're needing to study here at different hours. Maybe we look for other ways to create 24-hour study spaces that are safe and have resources, like computers, like the anatomy boxes that people need access to.
Senator Hughes and Senator Bird.
So last semester, I think in like November or October, the College of Engineering opened the ECC to be open on Saturdays. And so I know just like from talking to students, they still don't know that the ECC is open on Saturdays. So I think that it's about like not necessarily just publicizing it, but making it public knowledge for all students, because I think once it's been closed at a certain time for so long, people are accustomed to that and they don't really recognize when that changes. So has it been thought about to do like a 1-year pilot program or something like that, which would allow time for people to become accustomed to that time change? Because I think like if it's sporadically, the times are changing, students might just come in one or two. But maybe if it's for a prolonged time, you might see better like communication with students and then a better outcome. Has that been?
That's a good thought. We did pilot one semester in the Knowledge Center, and then maybe it needs to be longer to get more students realizing that it's available. But you're right, if you open something and nobody knows that it's open, then obviously they're not going to come there. So I think if anything that we would do going forward, we need to be very mindful of doing the best we can to make sure that students are aware of it and have the opportunity to get here.
Senator Bird.
No.
Thank you. Any further comments, questions for Provost Norman?
I would just say I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion. Your very thoughtful and insightful comments that you have are just really valuable to me and important to me. I would encourage you, if anybody feels like they had something that didn't come out here that you would like to pass along informally, send me an email or whatever. It's important for us to compile this information, and it will be it will guide us into the future. So know that, you know, when you think about an institution, I know that several of you are graduating this year, and hopefully the rest of you will be graduating soon, that as we build a university, we're always looking to improve. And as the quality of the university improves, so too does the value of the reputation of the degree that you have. As the institution continues to grow and improve. And so, for example, those students who graduated a few years ago can now say, I graduated from an R1 university. I mean, that reflects where the university was headed and the type of institution that it is. So there are greater things ahead for our institution, and your input helps guide us toward those greater things. There are students before you that agreed to that we needed a new fitness center and began paying for it before they were actually able to use it. But this is whole part of this sort of paying forward thing of always being a better institution. And you are just a wonderful group of students and colleagues to work with, and I appreciate your input, and I hope you'll invite me back sometime to talk about anything you'd like.
No, of course. Thank you so much for those kind. With that, we'll continue into public comment. Is there any further public comment at this time?
Yes.
Okay.
Don't say
that.
All right. Hello, everybody. All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Little, Director of Election for the Record. So I'm here to just talk about the election results. So I'm just going to go through by each position and announce the winners and the amount of votes that they received. So we'll just get right into it here. So total voter turnout was 16,344 votes for the position of the president. It's Anthony Martinez with 2,428 votes. For vice president, it's 2,413 votes. We will now move into the College of Business. And the four winners for the College of Business are Jaquila Hall with 292 votes, Keegan Murphy with 317 votes, Cameron Beltre with 297 votes, and Madeline Watt with 293 votes. We will now move into the Kavner positions. And those two winners are Alexander Melchor with 97 votes and Cecilia Romero with 123 votes. Now moving into the College of Education, the two winners for that are Isaiah Davenport with 125 votes, and Jennifer Rogers with 129 votes. For the College of Engineering, there's three winners here. The first one is Ava Banfer with 178 votes, Savannah Hughes with 259 votes, and Stephanie Yang with 229 votes. Next, we have the Division of Health Sciences, which is one winner, with that is Valeria MPA with 85 votes. School of Journalism, there is one winner, and that is Dominique Hall with 90 votes. Now into the College of Liberal Arts, there are five winners here. That is Connor Doyle with 282 votes, Lauren Harvey with 278 votes, Tori Supple with 247 votes, Izzy Westerman with 306 votes, and Victoria Yegiayan with 270 votes. Next, for the College of Science, there were three positions, but only one candidate running, and that is the winner, Haley Collins, with 211 votes. Next is the Interdisciplinary Programs. There's one winner. That is Abraham Ahmed with 78 votes. And lastly, we have the senators for the Community Health Sciences, which is John Donahue with 292 votes, Vanessa Comanduri with 308 votes, and William Prempe with 304 votes. And that is the election results.
Thank you. Yep. With that, is there any further public comment at this time? Seeing no further public comment, we'll move into agenda item 7, reports for ASU and officers. President of the Associated Students, I have her report right here. Good evening, Senators. I apologize for my absence tonight. I hope you had a great break and already made the most of the last few weeks of our term today. Met with Vice Provost Heaton and Shitani, as well as Provost Carmen and Dr. Ellis, to discuss anti-defamation league training for faculty. Our installation of the pilot program will be Tuesday, April 23rd. I'll get back to you all with the exact times, but also try and make room in your schedules for that evening. I met with Registrar Heather Turk this week to discuss issues that were brought to me by individual students and highlighted in the recent SageBrush article regarding gender inclusivity and misgendering. There's a lot of great work that is happening with allowing students to include their preferred name in our database, but I believe that the next step in the process would be having space for students to designate the preferred gender identification and pronouns. I am hoping that ASU can advocate for this on a larger scale. If you'd be interested in sponsoring a resolution regarding this or learning more, please reach out to me. We are still working on organizing a panel and discussion surrounding food insecurity on college campuses on Thursday, April 18th. I hope you all make it to Fail Forward tonight. It will be a wonderful event. Have a great rest of your week, Hannah. Next up, we'll move into the Vice President of the Associated Students, Krista Bradley, and I have her report here as well. Hello, Senators. This evening I will be at the Fail Forward Celebrity Panel, so I cannot be with you all, unfortunately. I hope everyone enjoyed their spring break and came back refreshed to finish this last ledge of our terms. As for my report, I have been working on my transition materials with Vice President-elect Flengus and will continue to train her in order to make sure that she is prepared moving into the new and exciting role. I've been writing down all my projects and things that I wish I would have accomplished into my legacy box so that in the future, officers would like to take them on, they are available. Last night, we determined the winners of the 5 awards to be given out at banquet. Thank you to Senator Aziz for sitting on that committee and each members from each department. We had some really great discussions about all the nominations. I appreciate those of you who took the time to nominate your fellow peers for these awards. It is important to recognize as many people as possible throughout the year. Just a reminder that The Hunting Ground will be showing next Tuesday from 6 to 8:30 p.m. in the theater. This film is about sexual assault on college campuses and will host a panel after with a Q&A. Please email me with any questions, respectfully, Vice President Bradley. And then next up, we have Chief Justice Kate Groesbeck.
Hi, Senators. I hope your breaks were good. Mine was really short, as I'm sure yours was too. Okay, not too much to report on. Today I went to the Student Union Advisory Board with Chief of Staff Gresher. That was exciting. We talked about their scheduling regulations. It wasn't exciting at all, actually. But moving on. Staff revisions are still happening. Senator Burton sent me a draft this week, so I'm making my comments on that, and I'll have it back to him this coming week. We had a mock trial at the beginning of this month. All the justices are feeling prepared if a case happens. As far as I know, there are 2 charges right now, but that's all I really know. So I'm going to budget and finance this Friday. There were some issues with paying the associate justices and like what they're getting paid, but as far as I know, it's handled and it's going to be all right. Last thing, as you all know, job applications are open. So for judicial counsel, there's chief justice and 1 associate justice. If you're interested and didn't just run for re-election, apply or tell people to. I'm obviously graduating in May. I've worked really hard on judicial and I want it to keep growing. So please recruit good people to apply. That's all I have right now.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
No, thank you so much. And then at this time, I would like to pass the gavel to Speaker Pro Tempore Hughes. Speaker Pro Tempore Hughes, do you accept?
I accept. Thanks. All right, moving into agenda item 7E, Chief of Staff Matthew Dutcher.
Hi, Senators. How are you all doing?
Good.
Like Carissa said, a banquet is less than 2 weeks on the 9th. Again, it starts at 6 o'clock. Please get there around probably about 5:30, 5:45 to get the seats that you want to sit at the tables. If you have classes, I think Matt already knows about that, so don't worry about that as well. We're already in the process. Like Chris has said, we got all the awards together, so him and I will be going shopping soon to get the plaques and everything worked out for that, so it's all, you know, pretty and nice for you guys. So remember, on the 9th, please go. It's going to be a great time just to celebrate the end of the year for ASVN. Any questions about Bangor?
Awesome. Thank you. Director of Clubs and Organizations, Luke Bittar.
Hello, Senators. President Jackson and I are working with the Muslim Student Association to create a memorial display on the first floor of the Joe for the New Zealand tragedy. We're in the process of working with Inkblot to get the banner created, and the display will go up this Friday. Currently, members of my department are working on organizing a drive for 2 homeless shelters here in Reno. We're attempting to get clubs and the coalitions involved to try to make it a large-scale drive. We also have a funding workshop on April 3rd, which will assist clubs with applying for funding for the last period. The deadline will be the 5th, and then the hearing will take place the week after. In addition, the commissioners have sent in their proposed changes to our funding manual. So we're currently compiling them, and then they'll be discussed at our meeting on April 5th. Finally, club renewal will start April 4th, so please notify during your outreach if you're working with clubs, please notify them to get renewed as soon as possible.
Thank you. Director of Event Programming, Austin Lynch. I move to hand the gavel back to Speaker Martinez. Speaker Martinez, do you accept?
I accept. Thank you.
There
is no report from Director Lynch. He would just ask that we all attend the Fail Forward event at 6:30. Next up, we have Director of Legislative Affairs, Katie Wall.
Everybody. So we have our sexual assault and rape culture teaching on April 8th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the Great Room. We're working with the Title IX Office, That Cares, the Take Back the Pack campaign, Generation Action, and the Students to Abolish Sex Slavery to put on this event. We're all working together to plan out the agenda to see how it looks, so it'll hopefully be a really informative event, and hopefully you can make it and tell other people to come. We're working also on Campus to the Capitol, which is April 19th. It's the lobby day in Carson City. We're going to send out a GivePulse link soon to everyone, so I know it's after your terms, but it'd still be awesome to have you all there. We're going to be having a table inside the legislature building, and then we're going to have a press conference outside. We're going to be talking about the ASUN's legislative priorities and hopefully have some students speaking about things that are passionate, that they are passionate about. We're going to have shirts and food, and we're just trying to amplify our presence there in Carson. And then on April, Tuesday, the 16th, we're going to have a training for who's going to the campus to the Capitol. And we're hopefully going to have Sarah Peters there and Amber Joyner, who they're both the former assemblywoman for this district and now the current. They'll talk to students about how to lobby, and then we'll talk about our four legislative priorities you've passed and bills around that. And then this Friday, I've been trying to coordinate a meeting with organizers from the Take Back the Pack campaign, which is the campaign trying to address sexual assault, harassment, and rape culture on our campus. It's at 2 p.m. on Friday. I know Senator Green and Senator Flangus are both coming. It'd be awesome to have more senators there. It'll be just in Pack Place, and all the organizers are going to go through the research they've been doing and tell us more about their campaign. So it'll hopefully be informative for everyone. Just email me if you'd like to come, or just show up too, that's fine. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Thank you so much. Next up, we have Director of Diversity and Inclusion, Arzo Amirzadeh.
Hi, everyone. So Diversity and Inclusion teamed up with the Department of Gender, Race, and Identity to bring Dr. Crystal Tift to campus this Friday. She's a critically acclaimed actress, singer, and songwriter, and assistant professor of theater and performance. She's been in like TV shows like House of Pain, Hall Pass, Greenleaf, and many more. You can see her this Friday at the Act 1 at 1 p.m. For a keynote address of embodying intersections in contemporary performance poetry. We're also very excited to announce Noor Tabouri, who is going to be the keynote speaker for the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit at 7 p.m. in the Joe Crowley Student Union on April 11th. Noor is a prominent Muslim American journalist whose storytelling has changed the media landscape. The link to RSVP for that event is in the ASUN Instagram bio. We also still have our submission form for our microaggression video still open, so we still need more participants for that, so please spread that and join that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Any questions? No? Thank you. And with that, I've just received Director Lynch's report. And it reads as so. Hi, Senators. I hope you're doing well. The Department of Event Program is currently hosting our Fail Forward Week. Our goal is to encourage students to use their failures as an opportunity for growth. Please join us directly after Senate in the Wells Fargo Auditorium for our Campus Celebrity Panel. Daniel Fred, Kim Thomas, Dr. Shannon Ellis, Commander James, and Jody Likes will be answering questions about their failures and how they overcame them. Again, please join us right after Senate. This event is from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Tomorrow we will be giving out free donuts for our Donut Give Up event from 12 to 2 in the Casey Rotunda. Family Weekend is next weekend, April 5th to 7th. This Friday is the last day to sign up online. Please invite your families and join us in on the fun. The Diversity Summit speaker is Thursday, April 11th at 7 p.m. in the Joe Ballrooms. Please mark your calendar Noor, sorry if I mess up this name, but it's Noor Taguri is our keynote speaker for the event. As 25 years old, Noor Taguri has emerged as a prominent Muslim American woman, blazing a trail across mainstream media. She is forced like no other since launching her viral Let Noor Shine campaign in 2012. Taguri has built a social-aware and engaged community of over 1 million social media followers. At the same time, she's garnered international praise as one of the new media's most influential voices. Please join us for our keynote address. Please email me with any questions you might have. Austin Lynch. We'll move straight down into Director of Sustainability, Sierra Jicklin.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, so I'm going to recap Earth Week with everybody. Again, this is after some of your terms, but it's going to be a really fun event. So I had a few updates to make. We're looking at four events through the week. So the first one is Monday, the 22nd. That's the kickoff. It's going to be hosted at the Gateway Plaza right here. And that's actually being run by the Joe Crowley staff with Director of Sustainability providing support for that event. So it should be fun. There's going to be a lot of tables to check out. The second event will be on Wednesday. That's the 24th. And the evening around 5:30 p.m. at Wells Fargo Auditorium, we're going to have a mini research symposium that highlights some of the work that faculty on campus do to talk about climate change, talk about the environment, talk about sustainability. I think we still have a few poster slots available for that, and we're trying to make it really departmentally diverse. So if any of you know of a lab or of a professor, faculty member within your Department of Education, or your major, I guess, that you think would be interested in participating in something like this, please reach out. We have already a few diverse groups coming to present, but the more the merrier. Following the mini research symposium that same night on Wednesday, we're going to have a speaker series. So far, we have confirmed someone from the Department of Economics, someone from the Department of Political Science, and someone from the Forestry Department. I believe one other that's on deck too. So it's going to be a really great educational evening, and there should be snacks and food from Laughing Planet. And then Thursday night, I'm really excited to host a screening about the future of food and some of the threats to food and sustainability as we move forward. The documentary that we're screening is called The Gateway Bug, and it's all about eating bugs and how we can transition into eating insects for a more sustainable future. I'm ordering sriracha crickets and chocolate-covered crickets, and I think it'll be really awesome. Don't give me that face. It's going to be great. We'll make you eat one. let's see. And then, oh yeah, Saturday is the 27th, and there's going to be volunteering opportunities, so you can plant trees somewhere around Truckee, or you can volunteer to help pick up trash around the river. So I'll send out a comprehensive email probably by the end of this week. I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm saying it out loud. I'm going to do it tomorrow, send it on the listserv so that you all have that at your fingertips. And additionally, I would like to advertise that the 28th of April is going to be the Truckee Meadows Earth Day. So Reno Earth Day wasn't happening this year, but there's a new, smaller Earth Day, and I'll be there volunteering. If anyone else is interested in volunteering, that's an opportunity as well.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Director of Campus and Public Relations, Marco Andrade, and I have her report here. I don't have much to report. Just be sure to make sure that you're sharing the graphic that Chief of Staff Dunger has sent out to all of us. Thank you, Mabu Andrade. Next up, we have Director of Campus Wellness, Brendan Jordan.
How are we doing, Senators?
Good.
It's good. So tomorrow, we're going to be doing the filming for that discussion about sexual misconduct, gender identity, and privilege on different kinds of students on campus. So with something as sensitive as this, we're going to be running this as a pilot instead of an actual video that we're going to be putting out to the student body, especially in light of the campus climate survey about to come out. We don't want to push something under our name that's not going to be representative of what we find from that. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be exploring this, see if it's a viable option to communicate these kinds of ideas to the student body. And if it's something that'll work. So with that, we're going to be filming it tomorrow. We're going to be doing a reveal or a screening on Friday 12th as part of Health Week. And so an important part of a pilot is to get feedback, and it's because it's going to be mostly internal use only. I would love to see a whole bunch of you guys out there. And in terms of handing this off to the next session, this would be a great legacy for you guys to have to provide input, whether that's logistics of filmmaking, like weird angles, stuff like that, whether it's the kind of person involved, the kinds of questions. So your feedback is going to be super important for that. So let me just read again the dates for Health Week. So that's going to be the week right before Director Jickling's. So Monday, which is the 8th, is going to be Packed Snack. We're basically going to be handing out healthy, cheap and affordable snacks to different students in Hillier Plaza as well as in front of the KC. On Tuesday, we're going to be having a health fair from 10 to 2 in front of the library. So basically, you're going to talk to a whole bunch of vendors. And similar to the event at the beginning of the year, you get a ticket for every vendor. After 3 tickets, you can go and get food in the barbecue line. On Wednesday, we're going to be doing the activities trail, partnering with the Student Health Center. So that's going to be primarily from them. So there's going to be a campus map of a whole bunch of like light activities to do between classes. And then like President Johnson, Dr. Ellis, they're all going to be making like guest appearances on example videos for that, which is pretty cool. And then Thursday, we're going to be having a food panel down in DMS, so basically discussing a whole bunch of different ways to eat, strict, loose, like a whole bunch of different topics. So if that's something you're interested in or you know somebody that's interested in that, that's going to be in DMS 105 from 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday the 11th. And then on Friday, we're going to be having that film reveal from 7 to 9 in Joe 320. So that's probably the most important day for you guys to remember, so I see a whole bunch of you guys there to give your input. So are there any questions?
Any questions for Director Jordan? No? Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Next up, we have the Attorney General, Omar Moore. I have his report right here as well. I hope everyone had a great break. Just 2 brief updates for me. 2 upcoming committee meetings I will be attending in the coming weeks are the Student Fee Review Committee, as well as the Core Theme 1 Committee. Any feedback or insight one change being shared and discussions at these tables are always welcome. Just reach out. Also, with the close of election, Director Little and I are going to begin to substantially review the Elections Code. Anyone wanting to be part of these conversations is also welcome and has only need to email me. That is it from me. Have a dope week. That's Omar Moore. And with that, please let the record show that Senator Burton left the room at 6:33 p.m. And we'll now move into my report. My report's going to be pretty brief. If any of you can volunteer at Kids U tomorrow from 9 to 10, at least from those times, that'd be amazing. Thank you so much to Senator McKinney and Senator Rogoshevsky for being there. I already informed Amy, and you'll be getting more information today. But at this time, can anyone else attend? At all? No? Yeah, I know it's at the same time as the Cheerios thing going on in the Down Under Cafe, but if anyone's still able to attend, that'd be really amazing. So if anything comes up last minute, please let me know. Also, I'm going to be passing out these for those of you that are here. Everyone that has been nominated has been comprised in this sheet. So it's for Center of the Year, Outreach of the Year, Legislation of the Year, and Most Improved of the Year. So these were people nominated by all of you that you've submitted. I'm going to pass these out. You can just check the box, you can circle the name, but just get this to me back by the end of the meeting, and that'd be amazing. So I'm just going to pass these out right here. And I'll even leave one for the record for Secretary Godoy to know the nominees. And then finally, just to be noted, the link for the outreach hours for this period have been sent out via email. If you did not receive them, please let me or Secretary Godoy know so we can get that fixed right away. Perfect. And again, our last meeting is April 10th. If you need any legislation fast-tracked, please write a memo with it. And any other legislation should be going through committee. Please get legislation to me by 5 p.m. tomorrow. I already have around 6 pieces, so if there's anything else, I'll send out a review for you all to look at before I post it to make sure we have everything. Moving now into agenda item 8, reports of the Senate Committees, Chair Committee on Academics, Senator Collins.
Hey guys, so I'm sure a lot of you are tired of seeing all those messages and emails from me, but luckily for you guys, our terms are almost over. You don't have to see those anymore, but last time, I promise I'm gonna make this announcement, but tomorrow I'm having a
meeting at 3:30. It's a temporary committee, and basically all we're doing is we're allocating the $10,000 budget from ASUN to award the International Research Awards. And yeah, that's it. But we have, I want to say, there's only three senators, like including myself, that are able to attend. And I realize a lot of you guys have class at that time or other obligations going on, so don't feel pressured. But if you can attend, please let me know so we can have more people there. As well as Scott Mensing has asked me to reach out to you guys about the NERA Award, which is what we did last semester, where we had reviewers. And you basically just got about 10 or so applicants, and you reviewed them, filled out the rubric, and basically just sent it back. It wasn't too hard, but if you're interested in doing that, please let me know. And if you know anybody you would feel might be like a good reviewer, also let me know. I only have like three people on my list so far, and I don't want to send a list of three to Dr. Mensing, so if you can send those to me, that'd be great. Aside from that, we have a meeting this Friday. The only thing on the agenda is a piece of legislation about OERs, which is what we just talked about with Provost Carmen. And then, aside from that, I'm going to start working on the legacy box stuff. So.
Thank you. Senator Flangus, did you have a comment?
Oh, what was the time again?
Oh, tomorrow, 3:30 here in the Senate chambers.
Is anyone else able to make that time that has not already volunteered? Senator Flangus? Anyone else? Senator Westrum? Anyone? Dr. Reed?
Hey, just so you know, that's something you can, when you do these things, you can put those on your resume, right, under University and Community Service.
Senator Rogers? Perfect. Yeah, especially on your CVs. That'd be really great. You put everything on there. You'll need it. Anyone else? No? All right, and then just with that, again, please send those to Senator Collins. If you want to draft like people now, just on a sheet of paper of who you think would be best to review the NERA, I think that'd be amazing to send those over to Dr. Scott Mensing and to Senator Collins as well. Next up, we have Chair of Committee on Budget and Finance, Senator Grant.
We'll be meeting this Friday at 10 a.m., conducting financial reviews of legislative affairs, judicial counsel, and the undergraduate research journal. And yeah, that's all I got.
Thank you so much. Any questions? No? Next up, we have Chair of Committee on Civic Engagement, Senator Maya.
Hi, so our committee met today, and basically we approved all the minutes there ever was, and we only have one more meeting left.
Thank you. Any questions? Chair of Committee on Government Operations, Senator McKinney.
We'll be meeting Friday at 1, and we have three different pieces of legislation on the table, just regarding different things to do with the SAS, outreach hours, things like that, finding recognitions, all that good stuff. So that's all I need.
Perfect. Any questions? No? All right. Chair of Committee on Public Affairs, Senator Aziz, since Senator Alvarez is not present.
Public Affairs will meet this Friday at 1 p.m. in the KC, room 423. We have no legislation on the table, so if you have anything, final resolutions to get passed, I suggest you fast track because they probably won't make it to us.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? No. Senator Green, Chair of Committee on University Affairs.
We will be meeting this Friday at noon in the President's Conference Room. We'll be talking about the accessibility water cruise again. We'll also be talking about Earth Week and getting volunteers on the committee to attend the Earth Week events. And also Saturday afternoon, we are going to be doing some walkthroughs. So if anyone's able to attend, I'll send that information out in the group me in the next couple of days, but I'll probably buy like some donuts or something. And if anyone's able to attend, that would be awesome. So that's about it.
And if you could send it out actually to the Senate listserv, and then even better if you want to send out to the ASU and Gov listserv to possibly get more individuals, that'd be best. Perfect. And next up, we have Speaker Pro Tem Voorhees.
So I reached out to all of the senators-elect for the 87th session and got the emails of all of the new senators who want to potentially meet with the senators that are in their colleges right now. So I got their emails, and I will be sending like a group email for all of the different colleges and encouraging the current senators to like set up a formal meeting with those people so that you can kind of have a verbal legacy box type discussion and just like incite your knowledge to them so that we can have a better transition. So you'll probably be getting an email from me. If you don't, it's just because nobody was interested in meeting with the senators from the 87th session, but quite a few of them are interested, so that is what that will be. So please meet with them.
And then for the Committee on Oversight, we will not be meeting next week, but we will be meeting April 8th, so just keep that in mind. So 2 days before the 10th. And please let the record show that Senator Sewell entered the room via telephone, everyone looking around, 6:41 p.m. Next up, we'll move into agenda item 9, comments and announcements. Are there any comments and announcements at this time? Seeing none, we'll move into agenda item 14, first reading of legislation. We have Senate Resolution 86, a resolution to censure Senator McKinney, and Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations. And please let the record show that Senator Burton re-entered the room at 6:41 p.m. We'll now move into agenda item 15, motion to fast-track legislation. I'm seeking a motion to fast-track Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations. Senator Burton.
I move to fast track Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations to unanimous consent.
Is there any consent to fast track?
No.
Seeing none, pieces of legislation is fast track. We'll now move into agenda item 17, second reading of legislation. Senate Resolution 86, a resolution to censure Senator McKinney. I am seeking a motion to approve Senate Resolution 86, a resolution to censure Senator McKinney. Senator Aziz.
I move to approve Senate Resolution 86. A resolution to censure Senator McKinney.
Is there a second? Senator Burton.
Second.
Thank you. The resolution is pretty straightforward. Secretary Godoy, did you bring the memo?
No.
Okay, no, you're fine. If I need to pull up the memo, I can, but I know Senator McKinney had stated in oversight if you wanted to present anything on behalf of the censure. If you would like to do that now, you're more than welcome to.
Awesome. So I believe there are two ways to look at the situation. There's one to look at it through the letter of the law lens, and through that lens, 100%, I believe I do deserve to be censured. But there's also another side of this, and that's the spirit of the law. And I believe that through the spirit of the law lens, I believe I do not deserve to be censured here. So let me just go over this. All my outreach hours, except 2/3 of a point because I missed a recess of the very first Senate meeting, as we all remember, have been from missing outreach hours. Two of those periods of outreach hours I missed did not do any outreach hours. I know we all go through things, busy schedules, everything like that, but the other two outreach hours periods of which would deduct points enough for me not to be censured were 10:10 to 10:24 and 11:07 to 11:20, of which I do not like keep an accurate calendar and everything like that, but I looked at other outreach hours to try to jog my memory of what was going on during those periods, and I came up, attended Howell Fest. That's for 10:10 through 10:24. I helped set up Are You Smarter Than a Senator? And that is what I did. I forgot to input. That was my idea. I helped set it up, and then I was there afterwards, Jennifer Rogers. As for 11:07 to 11:20, I attended the Veterans Luncheon, and this can be approved by Senator Green as well. For the rest of the outreach hours during those periods, I don't have excuses for that. I believe I did do them because afterwards I was like, oh crap, I didn't put the outreach hours into the system. Those are my bad. But I believe that's an administrative error. But yeah, so if you have any questions or anything like that.
Thank you. And we'll now move into a question and answer. Are there any questions at this time? Any discussion? Senator Burton?
With the hours that you kind of just mentioned to like excuse, what were your point total? I can't do it in my head right now. Like, do you know off the top of your head? Like, it would just be minus, like, what? How many points?
I don't know. Below 5.
Thank you. Senator Green?
Yeah, normally I view things from the letter of the law,
but on this one, I'm going to have to agree with him from the spirit of the law perspective. I think he brought some valid points to his arguments, and I really don't believe he deserves to be censured.
Thank you. Senator Aziz.
At what point do we not have to take responsibility for meeting the deadlines?
Senator McKinney, if you would like to respond.
Oh, is that a question towards me?
Yeah.
Oh, at what point do we have to take... Wait, can you repeat it?
At what point do we have to take responsibility for missing that class?
After this one.
So we'll go Senator Flangus, Clemens, then Rogers, and Grant.
I guess this is a question to the speaker, to Senator McKinney. I was just supposed to be about learning something from people, having engagements with people, and to me it sounds like your outreach is you went to things, but substantive outreach is talking to people and learning something from them. So I think if you're going to talk about the outreach that you've done, I'd love to hear what did you gain, what student feedback did you talk about, what ASUN was doing, that kind of stuff. Because attending the veterans luncheon is great, but what did you gain? So if we're going to take that as merit of outreach, can you explain a little bit more?
Okay, so the veterans luncheon per se, we sat there, we had nice pizza and everything like that, and we talked to members of ROTC as well as veterans of their experience on campus, what kind of things they use as counseling centers and everything like that. I gave them the opportunity, I gave them the services that they could go to. That's from what I remember off the top of my conversation, from the conversation that I had there. For Howlfest, I'm not 100% sure. I remember, I can go back to this, Senator Rogers, yes, you did help set it up, and we did set it up. I brought the materials and everything like that. You set it up and you ran it. While I was at work, I came back and helped clean it up, and then I attended Howlfest after the fact. Just clear that up on public record as well. From that, I don't know about what substantive information I gained from constituents, so that one I can't really back up. Remember for the Veterans Lunch one, I can say that.
All right, we'll go Clemens, Rogers, Green.
I'm sure.
Thank you. Rogers.
Yeah, I think it's really important because you brought a bell down. The signs were brought by somebody else, or the name tags, the
tablecloth.
Thank you. Tablecloth was brought down, and then somebody else also brought up the stuff because I had a candy bucket. So I remember that was brought up and left under Speaker Martinez's desk. And then he worked the entire time, and by the time I left, it was almost over. And I left pretty late because I had a test that time.
Senator Rogers, I just want to make sure it's germane.
Yeah, it's germane. I don't think that should be counting as outreach hours because we're not outreaching and you set up a table.
Thank you. Senator Green.
I'm just going to go off Senator McKinney's point of the administration error. This is a new system with outreach on logging hours through Excel or through Google Docs, so their grade potentially could have been administrative errors there.
Senator Hughes.
As far as administrative errors, everybody pretty much has been competent enough to finish all of their outreach hours and do that by the time allowed, and then additionally, if you actually did your outreach hours sufficiently, you could always appeal that, saying that there was a technical error or something to that extent. I know that all of us have Secretary Godoy and Speaker Martinez's contact information, so if there was a technical issue with that system, we could always reach out to them and appeal that, and I think that they've been very understanding of the new system. And as you can see, if you look at the memos, a lot of points have been appealed when they have been justifiable. So as far as administrative errors, when pretty much everybody else has been able to do it, I don't think that, if we were seeing an issue if nobody was able to meet that standard, I think that it'd be a justifiable argument. But since everybody has been able to do it, I don't think that that is an excuse.
If we're all ready, I would like to move it to a vote, but if not, I want to give Senator McKinney the floor one more time if you have any further comments.
Oh, and I obviously won't take anything personal by the way you guys voted. I just gave my reasonings about what the reasonings were behind those. Just want to put that out there as well.
All right. With that, we'll move into a vote. All those in favor of Senate Resolution 86, a resolution to censure Senator McKinney, please designate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
Aye.
Oh, we may have to do a roll call. guys. Let's do a roll call vote.
Senator Ahmed?
Aye.
Senator Maya?
Nay.
Senator Aziz?
Nay.
Senator Burton?
Nay.
Senator Clemens?
Nay.
Senator Collins?
Aye.
Senator Dodd? Oh, she's not here today. Senator Flingus?
Nay.
Senator Grant?
Nay.
Senator Green?
Nay.
Senator Hudson? Oh, sorry, he's not here. Senator Hughes?
Aye.
Senator Lemus?
Aye.
Senator McKinney?
Boyd? Or...
Senator Rogoszewski?
Nay.
Senator Rogers?
Aye.
Senator Sewell?
Aye.
Senator Westerman?
Aye.
Senator Yegi-Yayan?
Aye.
You have a tie. 8-8.
Aye.
Motion carries.
With that, Senate Resolution 86 passes. We'll now move into Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations. I'm seeking a motion to approve Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations. Senator.
I move to approve Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations through the
amendment
consent. Oh, no?
Yeah. Dissent. We just want to hear a discussion on it. It's not unanimous consent. Yeah. So, Senate Resolution 86, I'm seeking a motion. Senator Collins.
I move to approve Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluation.
Is there a second? Senator Green.
Second.
Thank you. And with the second, we will now move into a presentation on the bill from Speaker Pro Tem Voorhees.
Hi, everyone. So I met with Provost Carmen about a month ago, and I expressed something that we've been discussing a lot in the Committee for Academics on opening up course evaluation. So as you can see, I discuss how often students use Rate My Professor and basically make the argument that we should be using the infrastructure that we already have in place with student course evaluations and allowing students to access the aggregate data that we receive from those. And then in addition to that, I also brought forth two additional questions to add to the course evaluations that would reflect on the affordability of course materials, not only for students to see once these are hopefully made available, but also for professors to look at them and like, okay, students are spending over $200 in my class alone, maybe that's too much, especially if they're saying that they strongly disagree that these course materials are required to achieve the essential learning outcomes of the course. So it'll hopefully benefit faculty as well as students. And so, this is a conversation that I had with Provost Carmen, and he urged me to write legislation so that this conversation could be brought up again with higher administration as well as the Office of the General Counsel. The current standpoint on the Office of General Counsel is that we're not legally allowed to post aggregate data. However, this is not advocating for the written responses, it's just the statistics on it, so the 1 through 10 grading scale or whatever that the course evaluations are being used. And this is already implemented on other campuses as seen in the legislation, so I think that their argument might be a little outdated. So we would just be sending this to them to have them revisit the conversation.
Perfect. Any questions? Discussion? Any questions, discussion at this time? All right. Senator Flangus?
I don't know if this is something you can include in the document, but I know I've had professors in the past also assign course materials that they personally make money off of, which has been very frustrating to me. So I don't know if it's something to include in the legislation, but even a question like that, does the professor make money off of this course material? Because I think some students, if you have a choice between a course, I would choose professors who aren't specifically making money off of me based on the course I'm forced, the book I'm supposed to buy. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily know if it needs to be included, but it's something that I think is important on that same
train of thought.
Point of information, Senator Flangus, are you asking to just include it in this draft, or are you asking if it's appropriate to add?
I'm asking both.
Dr. Beagle.
Sorry, I'm confused. Maybe you all understand better than me. So you're asking a student in an evaluation to mark if a professor is making money off their course materials.
Yeah.
So at what point then, why would the professor ever tell you they were making money if the student could mark that? If I was teaching a class, right, I wouldn't make it then publicly known that students were going to mark that money off.
Senator McKean, Senator McKean.
Because the author title on the book, you don't have their last name. So you can see that they're like, oh, you're my professor. Oh, you also authored this book.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, you're kind of making money off this.
Dr. Beattie.
Well, there's a lot of things I author that have my name on it that I make no money off.
Senator Flingus.
In my, I'm just speaking from my experience. I had a professor that specifically said he authored this book, and that if you buy it, you're going to make some money off of it, which rubbed me the wrong way. So that's just something that, in the context of affordability of books, also if they're making us buy books that they make money off, it's weird.
We're going to go Hughes, Rogoshevsky, Burton.
I think that that'd be a really interesting thing to look into and maybe like have a few meetings about it and then potentially write legislation for it in the future. But since this legislation was solely based off the conversation that I had with Provost Carmen and it was kind of like a joint effort, I think that that would be best suited on separate legislation.
Rogoshevsky.
I just feel that that's a kind of an external circumstance, as in I'm not sure how many students know. Even if the last name is the same, there's very common last names out there. They may not have any correlation. So I'm not sure just how that would affect and how students are supposed to know that that happened.
Senator Brennan.
I think Senator Hughes kind of makes a good point. Kind of, it should be it's a separate issue at that point. So I think that we should probably have a discussion on that particular. Yeah.
Perfect. Any further questions? Discussion. Senator Rogoshevsky.
Would this make it more enforceable, whereas if students are giving feedback of they feel as if the materials are not valid or cost too much money, will it be enforceable where we can step in and then say, okay, you're not supposed to be selling this book or promoting this book anymore and require it in your classes?
So that goes under like the freedom. It's what's it called? It's like freedom of higher education or like academic freedom or something like that. So professors can really assign whatever they want to assign. But I think like I know from personal experience and feedback that I've gotten from a lot of students is that when they're about to take a class, they all look on Rate My Professor and everybody says we never use the book, so they're not going to purchase the $200 book. They might opt to just rent it for the time period that they have a test around that time, and they kind of make that decision based off of the feedback that they receive from Rate My Professor. So because of the academic freedom policies that the university and like public universities across the country go by, we couldn't necessarily say, you cannot do this. I would love to see the university say, you cannot make students pay more than X amount, or you cannot make students purchase access codes. I would love to see that. That's a conversation that I have had with Provost Carmen. However, this would like just be giving the students that information on an institutionalized level.
We're going to go Flangus and Burton.
I just wanted to make a comment. I appreciate on page one where you talk about how institutionalized public evaluations give non-traditional students information. I think that's a really important component of this, and I appreciate you putting it in the legislation.
Senator Burton.
The other speaker too, Senator Hughes, would you think it would be more appropriate instead of the one of the questions being the required course materials are essential to achieving the learning outcomes of the course? It'd be better to like have that, or to propose to have that broken up so like the clicker software was essential, or this piece of software, or the textbook in general. What are your thoughts on that?
Speaker with Tim Porter.
I don't think that that would be appropriate. They have done a lot of studies on how people respond to surveys, and after a certain extent, people just stop answering them or stop answering them as thoroughly. And that's something that I did discuss when we brought up adding additional questions. The provost said that he would want it to be limited to one question. However, I thought that those two kind of encapsulated the two things that I most wanted to see. So I think that that one question is appropriate, and then the professor will obviously know what the students are referring to, because if they don't use clickers, obviously it's the textbook or something of that nature.
Thank you. Any further questions, discussion at this time? All right, we'll move into a vote. All those in favor of approving Senate Resolution 86, a resolution in support of amending student course evaluations, please designate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? All right, resolution passes. We are now gonna move into agenda item 19, comments and announcements. Are there comments and announcements at this time? Seeing none, we'll move into agenda item 20. Is there any public comment at this time? Seeing no public, Senator Flingus.
Hi, sorry, I'll stop talking. There's all the applications are open on the ASM website, so if you guys know anyone interested, slash if you are interested, slash if your constituents are interested, please let them know. It's very difficult to navigate the Workday website, so if you could help them put it out on your social media, that would be really, really great. The first round of applications closed April 9th, the second round closed April 12th, and then after that, all the rest of ASUN closes April 26th. But they can be reopened up to the director's purview, but just if you guys know anyone, the deadlines are approaching very rapidly.
Thank you. Any further public comment at this time? Seeing none, I adjourn this meeting at 7:01 p.m.